Wow.
All right, we're going to take some chances tonight. I don't know about you, but is it fun just talking about stuff that's really silly and drives people crazy and makes them angry? We're going to give it a shot tonight. And I don't want to do this alone, so he better answer his phone when I call, because if he doesn't answer his phone, we're in deep doo-doo. Let's see if it works.
Hello, we are not available now. Please leave your name and phone number after the beep. We will return your call.
Alouette, je te plumerai. Alouette, gentille alouette. Alouette, je te plumerai. Je te plumerai la tête.
Je te plumerai la tête.
Et la tête.
Et la tête.
Alouette.
Alouette.
Ah. Alouette, gentille alouette. Alouette, je te plumerai. Alouette, gentille alouette. Alouette, je te plumerai. Je te plumerai le bec.
Je te plumerai le bec.
Et le bec.
Et le bec.
Et la tête.
Et la tête.
Alouette.
Alouette.
Ah. Alouette, gentille alouette.
Hey, Frank.
Je te plumerai.
Hey, Aaron.
Gentille alouette.
Hey, how you doing?
Alouette,
I'm playing music.
Plumerai.
Hang on a second. It's
je
not over yet.
Je te plumerai le cou.
Je te plumerai le cou.
Et le cou.
Et le cou.
Et le bec.
Et le bec.
Et la tête.
Et la tête.
Alouette.
Alouette.
Ah. Alouette, gentille alouette. Alouette, je te plumerai. 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 Alouette, gentille alouette. Alouette, je te plumerai.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello.
Well, I'll tell you what is a story. I opened up, cracked open a bottle of wine too early today.
Uh-huh.
Way too early. And made pizza for the kidlets.
Uh-huh.
And around 5 to 10, maybe 6 to 10, I opened my eyes and I looked around and I said, where is everybody?
Nicely done, sir. Good timing.
So I'm wiping the sleepy poop out of my eyes.
Very nicely done.
Okay, it's all out of my eyes. Yep, sleepy poop is gone. Oh, it's got a little bit of grainy in it. I hate when it has a little grain in it. It just rubs against your eyes and it hurts. Anyway, so I told everyone via tweet and Facebook that we were going to talk about Mr. Morgenthaler.
Ah, yes. Okay.
And the Buzzmare.
Ah, yes.
And I didn't know what else we were going to talk about, so that, I figured that'd be enough to prime the pump to get going. So maybe we should start by, Dr. Morgenthaler died this week. Dude supplied people a lot of entertainment, anger, bombs, F-bombs, real bombs. He really got the old social fabric in a rip.
Well, he got the ticker going, I'll give you that much.
And the problem was is because he was ending some tickers. He was ending tickers. Just the debate was whether... the debate is, and it will always be, an abortion is abortion a violent act or not? Or is it just a choice that a woman makes?
Well, I'll be honest with you, Frank. I've always been of the opinion that abortion is a choice, and if a woman needs to make that choice, then it's probably a good thing that she's actually got to be able to make it.
Okay. And so, you know, the thing about a debate like this, if we enter into this debate, it doesn't really matter what you think, because it really doesn't matter to anyone else. This is the most divisive subject, you know, that there is. It's a subject that that basically draws people's opinion right to the nub. You know, there is no, I really don't think there is a possibility for any flexibility if you believe in either position, in my opinion. So
fact of the matter is, abortion really is a polarizing issue. There's no really other way to look at it. You're either in favor of it or you're anti-abortion. When you look at the issue, and this is the way I look at it, Frank, and I know you're probably going to disagree because my point of view usually doesn't agree with a lot of people's. When it comes to abortion, that sort of thing is a choice. And it's not necessarily abortions all the time. It's the fact that the woman has the choice to make it if they want. And that, I think, is what sets a lot of people off. A lot of people are happy with God-given free will, and Lord knows I am. But the ability to control your own creative rights, so to speak, your own ability to spread your seed or not, that is one of the fundamental things that you have to look at when you look at the Canadian Constitution and you look at the Canadian nation.
All right. Well, you're right. I will disagree with you in the sense that if I use the same words that, you know, freedom is in the eye of the beholder, in my opinion. You know, listen, first of all, I want to say this, and I don't want to drive my priest crazy. First, I believe a woman has the right to make a decision, right?
Yep.
And a woman with, you know, of a certain age, whatever that happens to be, where we figure that person's making decisions that are, you know, thought out. And in my opinion, abortion is requires a very thoughtful decision. That decision, either way, I don't think is right, and here's why. You're talking about two people, not one. Now, if you don't believe that there's a second person involved, then the debate ends right there. You know, there is no debate after that. You know what I mean? Because if you don't believe that the fetus is a living being, then you don't believe that fetus has any rights. It goes without saying, right? Would you agree with that? First step?
No, I do, but here's my argument against that, Frank. Up to a certain point, when do we agree that the fetus is actually a person? And that, I think, is really the heart of the matter here. You know, when is the fetus actually viable? Do we go by the standard medical definition of when it's able to survive outside the womb on its own? Or do we go with the biblical definition of I am a fetus because, you know, God has breathed life into me?
Okay. Is it a child at the point of conception or birth is the question that you're asking?
Exactly. Now, the standard Canadian definition by law is that the child is not a child until it exits the birth canal and it's taken its first breath. So it's not actually a person until it's actually outside the womb, the doctor smacks its ass and it cries. That is the Canadian definition of when it actually becomes a person.
And again, if that's what you believe, right? If that's what you believe, then ending that whatever it is that's in there is not killing something because it's not something.
No,
if I follow the logic.
No, and again, by Canadian definition, it's not actually a child until it exits the birth canal by Canadian law,
is not actually a child until it exits the birth canal and takes its first breath.
Okay. Let me ask a question then.
Sure.
Because we're just this is all conjecture. We're just having a debate here. So for the people out there who are steaming, the phone number here is 714-242-5250. And if you don't have the guts to call when it's a sports talk, I have no doubt that you won't call it this time for sure. I'll tell you, that's a for sure.
Yeah.
You see, that again, that is the definition, because without that definition, Canada would not allow abortion. The only way abortion works is if that is the definition. But there are people in this world, including myself, who believe that it's a being before that point. Whether I believe or not that I get to decide whether someone gives birth or not, that's another question. Again, I have the belief that it isn't my decision to tell another person. Now, if it's my daughter, if I can take this subject a little, move the subject a little bit, if it's my daughter, can I stop my 40-year-old daughter from having a child? Absolutely not. Can I stop my 30-year-old child from having a child? I think not. Can I stop my 20-year-old child from having an abortion? No, I don't think I cannot. If my daughter is 14, 15, now we're in a gray area. And the reason we're in a gray area is because abortion doesn't come without its consequences. And I'm not just talking physical, which is obvious for some women. Some women have abortions and, you know, the horror stories are out there. You know what I mean? Things that happen. And I guess what I'm trying to say is it's none of my business, but if my daughter's going to do it, she's going to do it and think about it before she does it. And I don't believe in abortion as birth control. That's the first thing that I'm going to say, and that's my first dagger that I'm throwing into the subject.
And you know what? I'm going to agree with you. I don't believe in abortion as birth control either.
Right.
So in that point, Frank, we are both in accord.
Right. So
it should never be used as a form of birth control.
So then we have no argument. We can move on to the next subject.
Sure.
Well, hey, we just wasted 3 minutes. No.
I'm amenable to that. No, I mean, like,
that one's way too
easy. This way, Frank. I don't believe that abortion should ever be used as a form of birth control.
Well, good.
Now,
as
a pro-choice person, I'm firmly of the opinion that yes, it's the woman's right to choose. But by the same token, I don't believe you should be in the emergency room every, you know, 2 months looking for an abortion. That's not the right way to go. That, to me, is a sign of rank stupidity. It's a sign of an unwillingness to learn. And it's a sign of somebody that really isn't actually prepared for sex, let alone having a child.
And I would suggest that it's a person who's not ready for the healthcare system.
No, entirely not.
Unfair burden on the healthcare system.
Yeah, precisely.
Yeah, and so we agree on that. Well, that just ruined everything. Here we were supposed to be disagreeing on a bunch of stuff, and then we turn around and agree.
Well,
let me see. What
I hate to do that to you, Frank, but unfortunately, you know,
like
a pro-choice person, there are limits.
you don't come as advertised.
No, of course not. That's what makes me interesting. Come on.
Is that what it makes you interesting? Oh,
well,
boy.
Apparently, you know, I mean, like, I have contrarian opinions, but I'm not a total meathead.
Well, hold on a second. Just a partial meathead. Is that it?
Yeah, mostly. I mean, for the most part, I'm a meathead. I just not all the time.
There you go. Okay. Well, anyway, Dr. Morgenthaler was a very brave man who took a position that was less than popular, I might say.
Yes.
At a time when people felt, or at least discussed, the subject that we just spoke about with a lot of hatred and a lot of anger. But I have to say that the generation that came afterwards that experienced the whole thing, like my children, for example, we haven't discussed with them the idea. I have four daughters, so you can imagine the subject of abortion should be pretty interesting for me. My children are getting to the point where, you know, they're becoming of age and everything becomes their decision. And in fact, I promote that they make their own decisions.
The only reason this one becomes so serious for parents, I think, is that whether you buy into it or not, it's not the point. You know, children are something that that most of us, and I believe a very, very high percentage of us, believe are very special and very important, and are something that we live for. And the subject of killing, you know, children, if you believe it or not, for some people, it's all about a dream. You know what I mean? Like a mother and a father, when their daughter and or son or whatever come to them and say, we're going to have a kid. Like, I got a nephew. My sister has become a grandparent. It's a very strong feeling that enters your mind before the child's even born. So the seriousness of the subject is definitely that. The subject of abortion is dire. The subject of abortion is a real buzzkill. And I think, I hope I'm not minimizing the importance of the subject, but Dr. Morgenthaler spoke for a lot of women who had a right to make a point. And the point was that they are responsible for their body more than the people outside. I just, you know, I look at the abortion subject not as as a political thing, or I look at it as a familiar thing. And it's because I have four daughters, I look at abortion in the way that a father would look at abortion. I don't look at it as a political thing. So, yeah, so it's very serious. And I don't know. That's what I have to say closing on it. He was a brave man whom in the long term, did more good than he did bad. People did to him and the people who believed what he believed a lot worse than they deserved. And history is proof of that. His passing is just, I think, a normal progression in our way of, in time for the way of our thinking. Thinking about Morgenthaler today is a lot different than it was 30 and 40 years ago. That's my
now,
closing
remark. Now, here's an issue, though, they won't necessarily see in the general news media, Frank. The Conservative government of Canada can't honor him. And when I said, I mean, look at it this way. The current Conservative government of Canada is pro-life. They have to be pro-life because that's the Conservative stance on it. They cannot honor him because by that it means that they're rejecting some of the ideals of their base. So the passing of Henry Morgenthaler, despite his fight for women's rights, despite his advocacy for choice, all that sort of thing, cannot be touched by the current Harper government, because they are decidedly a pro-life government, which means, well, that one of Canada's greatest political heroes cannot be honored by the government that's currently in place, because it violates the fundamental base beliefs of their political base. And this is something that I've been talking about with people at work. This is something that I've been talking about with people in general. Is the fact that Dr. Henry Morgenthaler, despite the fact that he's a Canadian hero, cannot be honored by the current government because it violates their basic political perspective.
I'm not sure I totally agree with what you're saying.
Understand though, Frank. I mean, by acknowledging the accomplishments and the achievements of Dr. Henry Morgenthaler, the current Canadian government is saying, yeah, you know what, we believe abortions are okay. And
okay.
When you look at the Conservative base and you look at the Conservative government, that's not what they really believe in.
I get that.
And it's basically an untenable situation for them, unfortunately.
I just don't think what he did rises to the point where he's a hero. You know what I mean? I think all he did was maybe the word hero I can't consider him a hero. I consider him a politically brave individual who did things. It's just that, what is he a hero for? What's he a hero for? Okay, ensured that he was a part of them. I'm thinking outside my head here. I'm thinking out loud, eh?
So okay, no.
We make him a hero. We make him a hero. I really am. I'm not trying to be either facetious or try to be humorous. I'm not trying to be humorous here at all. So he should be a hero because he helped women with achieving their right to choose.
Exactly.
Right?
And that is a right that is actually in very, very short supply these days. The typical definition of a hero is a person, typically a male, who is admired for courage or noble qualities. This man, Dr. Henry Morgenthaler, fought for women's rights to control their reproductive futures. Okay? When he actually gave up his personal private practice in Montreal in 1968, this man decided he was going to go against federal law to provide a service that people actually needed. In 1988, when that law was actually redefined, it was redefined because it violated the civic and the basic human rights of women in Canada. So it was his determination and his courage to fight for these basic human rights that in my mind, at least, and I'm only speaking for me here, this is what makes him a hero. The ability of women to self-determine, to determine when they're going to have a child, how they're going to have a child, that is, as far as I'm concerned, that's a basic human right. You shouldn't carry a child to term just because you're pregnant. Do you understand what I mean?
When
you look at how women can become pregnant, and may God, I'm sorry, I'm going to get a little blasphemous here, Frank, but may God curse Murdoch and Aiken to hell for their friggin' opinions on this sort of thing. The ability for women to self-determine when they're going to be able to have children outside of rape, outside of incest, outside of the fact that it may kill them, the fact that he was able to provide facilities for those women to do that and to recognize their basic human right to exercise their God-given choice of free will is what makes him a human. Is what makes him a hero to me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. If let's here, I'm going to read something now. Okay.
Sure.
And it comes from that wonderful historical set of documents that people can edit and put their own thing in. So I take this with a grain of salt, folks. Okay, this comes from Wikipedia, all right? So let's remember that. Morgenthaler was named, this is directly in the subject that you brought up. Morgenthaler was named a member of the Order of Canada on July 1st, 2008. He was recognized for his commitment to increased health care options for women, his determined efforts to influence Canadian public policy, and the leadership in humanist and civil liberties organizations. Abortion rights activists applauded the decision, saying Morgenthaler put his life and liberty on the line to advance women's rights, while pro-life groups strongly criticized the award, saying it debased the Order of Canada. Feminist and author Judy Rebick told the Globe and Mail that it was time Morgenthaler was honored for his long battle. She said, "Dr. Morgenthaler is a hero to millions of women in the country," she said. "He risked his life struggle for women's rights. He's a huge figure in Canadian history, and the fact that he hasn't got the Order of Canada until now is a scandal." Now, this on the subject of what you brought up about Prime Minister Harper, in his own words. On the matter, Prime Minister Harper said he would rather see the country's highest civilian award be something that really unifies and brings Canadians together. While Liberal Party leader Stefan Dion, Dorgan Morgenthaler has stood up for women's rights to choose for his entire career, often at great personal risk, and asked Canadians to respect and celebrate the decision. Several members of the order said they would return their insignia to Rideau Hall in protest, including Roman Catholic priest Lucien Larrey, Gilbert Finn, former Lieutenant Governor of New Brunswick, Frank Chauvin, a retired police detective who founded an orphanage, and the Madonna House apostolate, on behalf of the late Catherine Doherty, ownership of the honor dies with the person, however, and their heirs and colleagues cannot return it. So, anyway, that the end there, maybe I read too far, but I think what that whole statement says, Aaron, is what you were talking about. Fair?
Fair enough.
Right? So Prime Minister Harper basically said, because I don't agree with what he did, we shouldn't honor him.
And the thing is, Harper cannot honor him.
No, I know, but I know he cannot. Because he is the side that he referred to that is aghast at Morgenthaler's being brought into the Order of Canada. So I stand corrected. Yes, I guess he was a hero. It says so in Wikipedia.
Well, you know, I don't like
I was trying to be funny there, and it didn't work. But mind you,
it went over like a lead balloon.
It sure
he'll be okay, though.
Yeah, I'm sure. The thing of it is that this is a subject that if we had it 20 years ago or 30 years ago, there would be fire everywhere. But today, I think people realize that, you know, they can't get too worked up about what other people do. As long as we all agree with the basic principle that government isn't in the business of erasing people's mistakes that should be erased by they themselves, or shouldn't be, I think is rather what I would say.
And yeah, I would agree with that.
And that's why this argument doesn't rise to the same rancor that it did earlier in life. Hey, how about, okay, now that's enough about Morgenthaler, buddy. We'll give him a thumbs up.
All right, fair enough.
We'll give him a thumbs up. I'm not saying where the thumb's going up, but still, the thumbs up. Thumbs up for him.
Lubricant. Always lubricant. Time for lubricant.
Please, lubricant. Doctor, not the rubber glove. Okay, I won't use the rubber glove. No, that's not what I meant. Anyway, there's always the opportunity that we're going to have people who disagree. And on this subject, I wanted to make sure about that before we jumped off, because I wanted to make sure that I had that story straight. Because I know to some people he is a big hero, to other people not so much.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What about this guy, the CNN new hot property? The mayor of Toronto, Rob Ford. He's making headlines everywhere.
He's, you know what? I've seen him on Jimmy Kimmel. I've seen him on CNN. John Stewart did a 9.5-minute piece on him last week.
That was hilarious.
Oh, it was brilliant. Oh, my God. We're a bunch of cocaine aficionado, blowjob bestowing people. It was absolutely hilarious.
Oh, that'd be ridiculed by only the funniest people in the world. Yeah, Rob Ford, what do you think? Like, because this is actually, there are a lot of people who aren't on the fence when it comes to Rob Ford. He has answered the question. Leave him alone. Yeah,
well,
but he left.
Let's look at his answer. I am not, I have not used crack cocaine, and I am not addicted. However, that still leaves open the question of whether or not he did use crack cocaine or not. Now, you know what I mean? Like, had it been me, and this is just me talking, I would have said, I have never used crack cocaine. I do not use crack cocaine. I will never use crack cocaine. See, that covers the past, the present, and the future.
I think in the press conference there was a lady whom I don't know which one it was, but one of the ladies in the back asked, and I think it was a lady, sounded like a lady, and you never know nowadays, but she asked the important question, have you ever used crack cocaine while in the office of the mayor?
That would have been Daniel Dale from the Toronto Star. That was the same guy that Rob Ford apparently attacked last year over the end of his property.
Yeah,
The answer to that was apparently meh.
Next question.
You know.
Next question.
Yeah, no, I believe his response was, is there anything else?
That's right. That's exactly what it. Anything else? Because I don't want to talk about that subject.
Yeah, well, no. We're done with that. That was yesterday's news. Anything else?
What do you think of the rumor that he possibly may have the video himself?
Well, I'll be honest with you, and this is a conspiracy theorist in me coming out here, Frank, so you have to bear with me on this, because my inner conspiracy theorist gets a little wonky every once in a while. Deco Labels is one of the largest label-making companies in the world. This means that they are not poor by any stretch of the imagination. Now, the Toronto Star initially didn't want to pay the $200,000 to buy the video. They
right.
saw it. They decided not to buy it. Gawker went to Kickstarter and Indiegogo to raise the $200,000 to actually buy it. However, in the meantime, while they were raising the money, the individual who actually owned the video
mm-hmm.
went underground and disappeared. Gawker is still in touch with the original tipster that tried to sell them the video. But the actual owner of the video itself has actually disappeared. He's gone off the grid. So this leads into a whole bunch of interesting conspiracy theories. In particular, you know, does Rob Ford want the video to disappear? There was an interview with Doug Holliday, the deputy mayor of Toronto, who is coincidentally the person that should have been, quote-unquote, speaking for the mayor all along, not Doug Ford. He said that the mayor knows where the video is, and that he's not particularly worried about it. His statements on his radio show last Sunday there's no such thing, we blah, 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 cannot confirm, you cannot talk about anything that doesn't exist, leads me to believe that there might be, and again, this is my inner conspiracy theorist talking here, that something has happened to the owner of the video and the video itself. Now, what a lot of people don't actually know, Frank, and I apologize for going on here, but what a lot of people don't know is May 21st, there was a shooting in the same building that the owner of the video lives in that the Metro Toronto Police are currently investigating. Now, I don't know where this investigation currently sits. I'm not that tapped into the Metro Toronto Police, but the fact that there was a shooting in the same building where the owner of the video lives leads my inner conspiracy theorist to believe that there might be something else going on.
Is it possible maybe that because it appears that if this video is factual and does exist and is real, and the mayor actually does hang out with crack buddies,
Well,
is it possible?
You know, he could take him with all the people.
Is it possible that guns are going off in a community where guns go off? You know what I'm saying? You know
it's
what I mean? Like, both
things
possible. Can be true, right? You know what I mean? Like,
well,
you
got to be careful of those Chinese people, too, Frank, because, you know, they work like dogs.
Oh, my God. Okay. Forward those cards and letters to Aaron Freeland. No, not
mm-hmm.
her, just Freeland. Aaron William Freeland. Leave me out of that. Listen, there's no need to bring up backgrounds. I think the important thing here in this case is that if the mayor is doing drugs, and he's, the part that bothers me more than him doing crack, as crazy as this sounds, is if he's hanging around with criminals. That bothers me more than anything, really. If I was a person in the city of Toronto and my mayor was hanging around with criminals, people who do drugs, use guns, and generally aren't, you know, your mom and pop, you know, corner store owner, I'd be more concerned about that than I would be about him doing the crack cocaine.
Don't forget the fact that he's not a fan of young, disadvantaged urban youth as well. Don't forget about his hug-a-thug programs. The fact that he was actually released from coaching the Don Bosco Eagles because of comments he made back in the month of March about them being gangbangers and dissolute and irresolute youth.
That's why
I mean, this guy, Rob Ford, has a history of saying the wrong thing and putting a foot where it shouldn't be. Unless he really likes the taste of the soles of his own shoes, this guy has been putting his foot in his mouth more often than he should be.
I can't disagree. And I got another caller here, and I know who it is. So have you said enough for now?
Do you want me to start the timer?
Yes, please. Would you?
All right.
Yeah, well, I don't want to change the subject, Frank, so it's John here, by the way. I just wanted to throw my two bits in regarding this Ford thing.
Hang on a second. Aaron and I have invoked a new rule.
What?
Okay, you can talk for 5 minutes, but then you have to stop. And then somebody else talks for. Okay,
yeah,
that's
okay.
A new rule. You got the horn going? You got the timer going there, Aaron?
You're on, John. Yeah, I'll try to remember that, guys. And then the next time when I feel like calling, I'll think about that, okay? Thanks for reminding me. Anyway, I love the way Toronto has become such wannabe politicians everywhere. If you guys know and follow really politics here in Toronto, what Ford's been doing is pure genius in this last incident. He's been accused of four previous so-called shady things that he's done, but also been cleared and forgiven. And he's been guilty in those. And he opened his mouth, and he talked immediately after denying it, and he put his foot in his mouth. And basically, he kind of told some white lies regarding the charity, donations, or whatever. Now this thing pops up. A reporter sees it. He sees a fuzzy video on a camera phone, on a phone, that they were sitting in the back seat. There was no audio on it. They weren't allowed to see it, whether or not it was doctored or not. And the story runs. Well, Ford, Mr. Ford, who killed a lot of unions here in Toronto, the garbage changeovers and all the billions that he saved, made a lot of enemies, I suppose. And these enemies are pretty good because they got the whole city believing that he's doing something like crack. And if this guy actually did it, believe me, he wouldn't be taking this stance where he's being quiet about it. He's just making everybody blow up and accuse him of something, and everybody's going to forget all the other things that he was actually guilty of prior to this, because this is going to be one of those things where he's going to say, I told you so. He's not stupid. He's a professional politician, and everybody's getting sucked in with this hypothetical videotape. Guys, I never voted for the guy. Don't even think I might now, but he's really making me change my mind, because he's got everybody fooled, and everybody's already accusing, hypothetically saying that he did it, and he's posing with these guys in photos. Politicians pose with a lot of people. They walk down streets, and you might have a whole bunch of gangsters just pull up and say, hey, photo up with me. But give me a break. Come on. No. First of all, even if there was a video, let's wait till to see if it was doctored. Okay, and then I'm only going to believe all this BS that's going around. But I love the way the news media has picked this up. And for you guys to even talk about it like as if it's a chance, the next time you get accused of something, hypothetically, remember what's been happening to Ford. You can fall in that same trap. No evidence, no proof, but he's guilty, right?
No,
nope, that was great.
I don't think that's what I said. Is that what you said?
Nope, not in the slightest.
Hold on. I've been listening. First of all, then you're coming across the wrong way. Let me give it to you that way, okay? Because
okay.
I haven't been hearing you say this side of it, all right? The fact that, you know, it's everybody's using the hypothetical situation where it might be him in the video that's not doctored, okay?
Okay,
so
first
of all.
So
this guy disappears. I knew, Frank, 5 minutes, right? I knew that I thought to myself, give him a week. I bet you there'll be no video. This is all BS because somebody who he really hates.
Okay, stop.
What?
Here's something you need to understand, John. When it comes to Kickstarter funds, in order to actually get your money out of the Kickstarter funds, it takes 5 to 15 business days, depending on how you're going to do it, from the day that your Kickstarter closes until the day you can access it.
Guys, this was
set up.
The videotape is never going to come out.
It's been done, John. It will take an additional agreement with the Canadian Border Services Agency in order to get anything over $10,000 across the border. Gawkers
it
from the
it could, be in the States, they can pull it out if there really was one. And after it's been re-examined, it'll be seen that it's a fake. This guy's not an idiot. If he really did one, he wouldn't put his family up front.
Not an idiot? Really? Sorry, John, you're telling me that Rob Ford is not a fucking idiot?
No, when it comes to being accused of stuff, he's a pro at it. He's already got a defense before he's already being accused, Aaron. Follow the politics. Vote. And then you're going to see what they're doing in Toronto here. This is just a guy who's not one of those clean-cut guys. He's a blue-collar, white-collar kind of guy who
used his family's influence to get shit done for himself in Toronto at the disadvantage of other people, John.
It's called politics, dude. They all do it. But at least he tells
called
me
abuse
he's
of
his family.
Power. It's called abuse of power. And it's not right, and it should never be tolerated in any form of politics whatsoever.
Well,
never.
You know
okay.
what? Then you
time
have
out,
ran
guys.
The last
time
you had.
Time out. Time out, please. Please. Time out. Time out. Okay? I was hoping for this kind of conversation. We were talking about abortion. It didn't happen, so. Oh, well. Uh-oh. There's
abortion.
The 5 minute clock.
Abortion? You're talking about abortion?
Just,
You'd rather talk
about
abortion?
No. Listen to me. Listen. No. Just slow down. Okay. Let's slow it down a little bit. Everybody take a step back, all right? Everybody take a step back.
No, what for, Frank?
Wait,
it's only fun when you go forward and you slow down. I want to tune out. I want to get it heated here. If you got a point, say your point.
Okay, my point is I wanted to jump in when you assumed that I'd drawn a conclusion. I won't speak for Aaron, but I'll speak for myself. You're welcome. Bless you. I don't know what the truth is here. I am not behind anything. You, John, seem to think that he's totally innocent. I don't think he's innocent or guilty.
Hold on.
Slow your roll.
No, I got to stop you. I'm going to interrupt you right on the air. Slow your roll. Never said it. I just don't like accusing people without evidence. Okay? I just don't like doing it. I agree with you. I follow my morals. I don't
evidence, John. There were three people that saw evidence. Two highly respected reporters from the Toronto Star. Robin Doolittle's one of them. Hasn't been proven wrong in the fucking 20 years that she's been reporting with the goddamn Star.
This is what I'm talking about. You were already accusing me of talking like he's guilty, Frank, and you guys are saying you're talking neutral. No, you're not. You're already accusing people without ever examining the video if it was doctored.
Where did I say he was guilty?
I never said he was guilty.
You guys are hanging the guy on the air.
Look at that.
Frank, I don't feel he's guilty. I don't feel he's guilty until I see proof, until you judge somebody with proof, this is crap. It's bullshit. It's bullshit.
Hang on a second. I don't believe anybody's guilty without proof. What I said was, let's talk about Rob Ford and this fiasco that's going on. And Aaron brought up the point, which I agree with, and that is that he didn't say he has never done crack, that he will never do crack, and he hasn't, and he didn't answer the question as whether he did it while in office. He gave a very open answer to where later he can say, but you didn't mean on Wednesday, you know.
He gave a very pat, very scripted political answer. I don't do crack, which is very intense, and
Aaron,
I am not addicted to crack.
But Aaron, let's lower our roll a little bit.
The media was asking him to answer, do you do crack? Are you addicted? And those are the two main questions that he was being asked. And so he came out and said, no, I don't do crack, and I'm not addicted. So now there's five more questions, follow-up questions. Have you ever done crack? Did you do crack in this video? So, you know what? It's one step at a time. He's being legally advised, and he's not being an idiot about it this time.
You know what, John? The easiest way to solve this question is for him to give a swab.
What?
If he's never done crack, give a swab. Give us some of your hair. I've never done crack. I will never do crack.
Aaron, you're funny because now I can tell you're not educated in labor laws. It doesn't matter what position in government you are. There are certain rights you have. You don't have to give up a swab to do anything. That's called infringement of your rights, Aaron.
I got news for you, John. As anybody who has half a decent functioning brain, if somebody accuses me of doing something, I'm going to do everything I can to prove that I'm not doing it.
Okay.
And in order to prove I'm not doing it, you know what? Hey, you want to? If you want to come out right now and tell me I'm doing crack or I'm smoking, I will give you a hair sample right now, to prove that I'm not doing it.
Well, good for you. Good for you. You know, and that's your right.
I'm not.
And it's
the fact that he doesn't do it, the fact that he's hiding behind subterfuge, the fact that he blames his lawyer that he shut up for a friggin' week, that to me speaks of guilt. I'm sorry, you don't hide shit if you're not fucking guilty.
Well, Aaron, hang on a second.
Honestly, if somebody comes up to you and you're trying out for the Argonauts and accuses you of doing steroids, what are you going to do? Aren't you going to try to clear your name right away?
The root of all this came in from some sort of video that's out there, right? That's the root of all this. It's the root
of something. So that
I know, but listen, we can say all we want. Hypothetically, he did it. Bullshit, we're all talking like he did it. Come on, let's be real, guys. Let's not float the boat here with crap. You know, come on.
You know what the most disappointing thing is in all of this, John? The most disappointing thing in all of this is the fact that people are willing to believe that he actually did. It's not whether or not he actually did. I'll be honest with you, I really don't care if he actually did crack cocaine or not. The fact of the matter is people are willing to entertain the notion that he did it.
Yeah, that's bad.
Willing to believe the notion that he did it, which speaks volumes to his integrity, to his character, and to him as a person.
Yeah, no, I just don't like hanging somebody.
I agree with you, John. I think, you know, Aaron doesn't – let's set the table here, okay? As the play-by-play guy here, now I'm going to introduce the players. We've got Aaron who can't stand the mayor of Toronto. Fair?
I don't like him as a person.
Okay, but that's what I'm saying. You don't like him as a person, right?
Yes.
Okay. And, John –
and then you got John
Define yourself.
And you got John here who never voted for him. But you also got John here only goes by evidence. I don't go by hypothetical evidence. I only go by what's in front of me and is given to me with common sense reality of what is given to me in front as far as proof. That's here. I don't like the guy, didn't vote for him, probably won't vote for him again. I just hate it when the media and everybody else hangs people like this. And just with bullshit evidence. It's nothing. It's not even evidence. It disgusts me, okay? I like to be more common sense. I like to go by the facts, by the proof. Again, didn't vote for the guy. I'm probably not going to vote again. Who knows if he's going to run. But I just hate it, Frank.
He says he's going to. No, you know what? I don't disagree with your position, John. I disagree more with Aaron's position because Aaron doesn't like him. But at the end of the day, as I said, and what probably gave you the impression that I believed he was guilty, what bothers me more, John, than him doing crack cocaine is him hanging around with drug dealers. That bothers me more than him doing cocaine or crack cocaine.
John,
do you understand what I'm saying? Are you willing
to hear
what
around,
I'm saying?
Again, we're defined that he's hanging around like he's buddies with these guys. You know, people, politicians walk
John,
door to door to your neighborhood.
You're saying
I would hate it more if we found that he hung around with people. I don't think he literally hangs around with people. I think he's so involved. His family is following him. They would literally know if this guy hangs around with drug dealers, okay? Being taken in a photo, that's another story.
I understand that. I agree with that 100%. I think I made my point very clear. I'd be more concerned if he was socializing, all right? Because the mayor socializes with, John, is very important to the electorate. And the electorate has a right to know who he hangs out with. If he's hanging out with the Nazi Party of Canada and he's going to their weekly meetings, I think the people – and I didn't say he's doing that, right? I want to make that clear. I didn't say he's doing that. I'm just trying to make a point. The point is – that the mayor of Toronto has an obligation, all right? Even the people we love and admire, the Toronto Argonauts, those guys, when they sign a contract, that says they'll remain decent people and won't do anything that causes disparaging remarks about the Toronto Argonauts. In other words, they can't be going hanging out with the Nazi Party of Canada. You know what I mean? As much as being a member of a party is a legal right, there is a responsibility to people that elect you. That's it.
Sure.
Frank was actually
in a picture with the leader of the fan club of Racial Holy War.
Yeah.
I just thought I'd mention that.
I'm going to give
you guys something.
You know, Frank, listen, when people go and ask him for a picture, and this happened at the Argo game when we saw him, friends of mine went up and met him. They don't go and introduce themselves, hello, I'm from a racist separatist party, or hello, I'm a crack dealer, would you like to take a picture with me? He just says, sure, let's go, and he smiles and he goes, okay? It's that general. Politicians do that, so I can't hang him for that either, unless he is habitually hanging around with these guys, habitually seeing in photos, but one snapshot, nah, one night shot, I don't, you know, guys, it's just too much crap that people fall for these days, and it's a slow news day in Toronto in politics, and it's saddening. This is really depressing that things like this can happen in today's society. People love to run people down, and even if he is guilty, I still would rather let him go through the court system if he had proof against them, and then totally morally be against what he did. But until someone's really proven guilty, this is the reason why we have a justice system and a morale system, really, that we structure ourselves by in society, okay? So let's
Dodged one bullet.
Oh, he dodged a lot. Like I said, the guy he's been accused of four different incidences in his term so far, and the recent one was that charity thing with the football team and stuff.
Illegal because it did actually violate the Toronto Municipal Conflict of Interest laws.
Exactly. There was a violation there, but you know what? It's one of those paper violations, and it wasn't like as if he was giving...
Violation, John? Yeah. I mean, are you really trying to tell me that a penalty is not a penalty?
But that's the reason why it's a penalty, and you give him a fine, and then you go on. You don't fucking fire
him. But penalty, John, clearly states that he has to be removed from friggin' office.
No, it doesn't state he has to be removed, dude.
Have you read the law? Have you read the 1990 Municipal Conflict of Interest Law, Section 5-1, John? I have.
Aaron, let me look that up. What number was that, 5-1? You know, I don't get into specifics anally like that, but I'm going just by what the conclusion was. The conclusion was he was slapped on the hand, and he went back into his office. So he was penalized for something that he did wrong. He wasn't terminated, which I knew there was a fine line that he could have been, okay? But he didn't cross that fine line. And again, if they really felt that he did, remember it was for a charity thing, he just didn't do the paper trail, I get
it. But regardless... For a charity, regardless if it's for Don Bosco, the fact is he solicited donations on City of Toronto letterhead, which is a clear conflict of interest as defined in the Municipal Toronto Conflict of Interest Law of 1990. Okay? It's there on the book. He received that every single time he went into the frickin' office as a councillor and as a mayor.
You know what, Aaron? I got to tell you something. What people forget, and this is the only reason why I say if he runs again, I don't know. I didn't vote for him before because I didn't think he would make any sort of a dent in the deficit that we have in Toronto. Okay, but the bottom line is hundreds of millions of dollars. All right.
Where? I'm sorry, John. I have to ask you where. You know what? Legally, by law, Toronto cannot run a deficit.
Okay.
Legally, by law. So you know what? If Doug Ford says, "Hey, we run a budget without deficits," well, yeah, because it's the law.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Aaron, I can tell you really hate him because you cut me off. But it's okay. I get it. You're passionate about it. It's all right. But I can't put hate into it. It's just too much. So I don't just think of negative stuff. Like I said, he has cut a lot of unions out. As far as the money that was flowing to them in the garbage contracts and stuff. My garbage, I'm 10 times happier right now what I'm getting the service than I ever was before. And he made those guys very unhappy. The whole entire West End got flipped over. People forget that. And I'm pretty sure the next time there's a strike, like I said, because the way it's done now, we're not going to get affected. But, you know, little things like this are what matters to me, that I don't see a tax increase that's so dramatic, I can justify it. And supposedly he's done that so far. I don't follow him to the core because I'm not some sort of Toronto political junkie, but I do follow what's going on now. And what I'm seeing from the outside is there were hanging people here, again, I'm going to that, without actual proof. And it is politics, and it's all about politics. And I think people just jump on too much, and there's so much hate going on. It's one thing if you like the story and you're intrigued with all this, drama, but it's another thing when we start throwing hate out there, And that's negative energy, Aaron. I just don't fall for that. I can't support it. I don't like the guy, but I just don't like the way people are acting towards this, what's going on. You know what I mean? That's all.
Well, then apparently you have the right guy on the phone because Aaron can't stand him. But you know what? I agree with you on that point, John. I fall in between you two guys. I think Aaron, for whatever reason, feels the way he does about the mayor. That's all right. And John, I understand how you feel about the mayor, but I hate to say this to both of you, but you're both right. You know, and unfortunately, this is what politics is. It's very polarizing. And John, the fact remains, the good that he's done. I don't know if there's any real good that he's done, to be honest
with
you.
Yeah, I know.
Because I don't live in Toronto, so I don't know. So you know, I don't know. But I do know one thing is that he is an abrasive person. He isn't a straightforward guy. He's kind of shady just in the way he behaves. You know, I don't trust him just to know him. What I know of him, I don't trust. But, you know, that's no reason for me to say that this guy's a criminal or that he's doing stuff. So let's make that clear. But again, he's the mayor of Toronto. He's the mayor of Toronto. And he's not just some guy walking down the street that you and I are talking about. This guy represents some six, you know, really, when people talk bad about Toronto, they're talking bad about maybe 6 to 8 million people. That's what
John,
I'm saying.
Question for you. You're on Facebook, yeah?
Yes.
Okay, I just sent you a friend request. If you've got a window open, please accept it because I'm going to send you a link.
Okay. Well, I'm not. First of all, Frank's show is running on two of my computers, so, and I'm away from it, so there's no echo. So I'll have to do it after I hang up.
All right. Well, I'm going to paste something in here, okay, for you.
Yeah.
You can put it
because I don't like leaving people with questions about what actually I'm talking about. So
Aaron, let me just make it clear. I don't doubt anything that you say on all his negatives, right?
I don't want you to leave you with the impression that I'm just talking out of my asshole here. Okay.
I'm gonna
send you the link to the Municipal Contract of Interest Act, RSO 1990.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm actually gonna highlight the section for you that I'm talking about when it comes to pecuniary punishment, which is the power of a judge to declare the seat vacant, which is section 10(1)A.
Aaron, okay, fine. Okay, if that was such a strong fact that you have there,
yep.
Then why wasn't it implemented, dude?
It was actually implemented. However, he appealed and found a better lawyer who was able to weasel him out of it.
So
he was actually...
Hold on a second. A better lawyer who found... What did he do? He found a loophole or did he find a legal stance that's justified by Canadian law?
The law. Solicited donations on City of Toronto letterhead. He was ordered to repay them by the committee, okay?
Yeah.
By the ethics committee.
Right.
He ignored that and then voted in his own case.
Oh. Okay.
Yeah.
So
he voted in his own case not repay the fund.
What he did, was that illegal?
Yes.
Oh, it was. So he should be in jail right
soliciting,
now, right?
Soliciting donations from known...
No. The loophole that he found with
okay,
his new
guys,
lawyer.
Let me,
was
let
that
me help out. Let me help out. John, let me be the bridge between the two of you. The problem is, and then you can both disagree with me after I say this. The law that he broke and how he broke it, okay? I want to say two things. This is one. The law that he broke and how he broke it didn't rise up to it being pursued any further than it was. All right? One. Two, what he did was tantamount to bringing in Girl Guide cookies to the office and selling them.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
And Aaron, this is my opinion. Like I said, I agree with both of you. What Mayor Ford did was 100% wrong. But what he did wrong was on the behalf of charity, and a lot of people are forgiving about that. One of the people that I know, I happen to be married to, that's her opinion. Her opinion is, well, it's not like he was trying to make money. He was just trying to help a charity, right? So, you know, that has to be held into account.
Yeah, but you know what? Technically, she's right. He was trying to make money because there was a tax bracket that he was looping himself out of. But you know what? Like I said, if it was so detrimental and it was so wrong, why is he still running afterwards? Because he found a loophole or no, he got a more better educated lawyer who found a legal stance. The legal stances are there because that's legal. So he used it, and he's still running. Then that's the end of the show, guys. When you're let go, you're let go. It's because there was a legal stance. So that means the law wasn't broken completely if you find a loophole. And it's sad, but that's just the way life is. So c'est la vie. We move on. And now, you know, people don't like him. Whatever. I just don't like the hate.
Now, I get that, John, but, you know, this isn't about hate only, okay?
It's becoming a lot.
Oh yeah, but it's fervor that you're mistaking fervor for hate. What
no,
you're
I'm
seeing from
a
Aaron
lot of
is
hate.
Fervor.
They're insulting
no,
his
fervor.
Weight again.
There's a difference.
They're saying
there's a difference.
No, it's a lot of negative energy, guys, and it's wrong
it,
and
it
the
is,
media
it
driving
is.
It.
It's not negative energy either. I disagree.
Well,
for the most part, it's perceived as negative energy, but it's real fervor. If you really believe something and what you really believe isn't happening, it makes you more frustrated and makes you want to make the point even harder. And that's where I think Aaron sits in the situation, where you.
Well, it's my desire to see justice done.
And wouldn't fervor be a better definition of how you feel?
Well,
yes.
If justice should be done, then we should follow justice's course, and that's with evidence and proof, not hypothetical crap, and then we hang people.
Look, here's the thing. There's two words that are used in politics that I believe in more and more the older I get. It's called, there's two words, slippery slope, okay? The mayor has been on this slippery slope where whether he's done something wrong or not, it becomes irrelevant because, quite frankly, it doesn't look good. You know, he shouldn't be using letterhead. He shouldn't use City Hall to promote
right.
his charity. All
right?
Right. If he was promoting the Catholic Church on letterhead, people would also have the same reaction. You know,
it
that's
was
not.
Wrong.
That's
but,
all.
Can
but
I ask you guys
it,
one
let's,
question? Can I ask you guys one question here, right? And maybe I might want to finish off with this one. Let's just say now this happens, okay? Turns out that the guy who produced the video comes back to say, sorry, guys, it was doctored. It was a spoof video. And this was done intentionally. And I admit, the guy who produced it to the reporters, this is a fake. What happens then, guys?
Then, you know what? You know what? Rob Ford has a right to pursue justice against him to the full extent of the law.
Okay. But so,
you know what? That's really what it
comes to. The reason why I threw that question out, get ready for it. Get ready for it.
You think someone's going to admit that it was doctored?
Yep. Yep. And then I would think that Ford had something to do with this whole thing to make himself look like a shithead and then comes back and looks like as if he's been shitted on and screw you guys. You know, then I would believe that theory that but I just can't believe he's that much of a genius to pull something that off. And this is the reason why I believe all of this is a bunch of crack-headed theory crap, okay?
No kidding.
Going to come out. So let's just wait for that theory. Think about it. He comes out. I think there's been a bigger story for this guy who has this video now. If he comes out and says it's fake, he'll become more popular and bigger headline than it would be if it came back that it was real.
Do you know what that means then, John? That means it's not-for-profit drug abuse agency in Toronto gets $200,000 thanks to the crowd-started campaign.
Well, sure, there's blessing in disguise all the time. But as long as there's not hate involved, and that's what I'm saying, Aaron. I listen to other radio shows. I'm watching the news and people commenting on the street and stuff. They've been kind of molded into hate words. It's not about politics anymore. It's not about justice. It's about hate, and they're trying to label Toronto as being embarrassed nationwide, worldwide. Well, let me tell you something. I had friends who came back from Europe just last week. You know, they said, no one's talking about Ford here. They always say about Toronto, you know, it's just the media trying to blow it up on talk shows and little things like this. It's not this worldwide Toronto negative image that people are trying to think it is, okay? It really isn't. I hate to burst people's bubble. But like I said, people in other parts of the world, they're worried about the crises in oil and their water right now is a big thing and that people are worried about, okay? Not the Ford situation in Toronto. So, you know, like I said, wait for that one to come out, that someone's going to come out and admit that it was a fake video, it was all a fake story, and boy, oh boy, that's the day I'm not going to really like, because, like I said, two things will be proven. One, we hang people without evidence, and number two, Ford, who shouldn't be getting the glory at all, will be, and that'll be the sad day, guys. So
absolutely.
I'll end it on that, because I want to watch the rest of this game. 3-0 Jays right now in the top of the fourth, bases loaded. Two outs, and we're about to get the pitch. And guess who's up at bat? The pitcher, Chad Jenkins from Toronto. So let's see how this turns out. I'll give you the play-by-play, guys. Here's the pitch. Ooh, it's a strike. No bunt. Come on. Anyway, yeah. So you know, I'm waiting for that other side that people don't think about what might come out of this. I've already thought the negative.
Don't worry, John. Don't worry, John. I'm thinking about that side too. I'm just opening the conversation up to the situation and getting opinions. It's too bad you weren't here for the abortion question because I have a feeling it would have been a little more interesting.
I heard the end part of it with you guys talking about.
What do you think of Morgenthaler?
Okay, hero in disguise. Okay, a blessing to a lot of people.
Why disguise?
Well, first of all, Frank, you know, I have my own personal views on this. I think people don't understand the suffering that elderly people go through, and it's their own moral. Upbringing and stuff that can't push them because you just don't know pain until you experience it in their age. It's depression, it's pain, it's a lot of things going through your mind. And when you have a gathering of people and a family that want to save the suffering from their family member or their parent and they talked it all out, this guy was a hero to these people in the 80s, okay? And I saw the documentaries, I saw the 60-minute reports when he first came out, and I believed, you know, back then I was a teenager, I believed that, you know, it was this guy, Dr. Killing People, you know, he's Dr. Death kind of thing, that's what people put him out there as, remember, hanging him, right, without the actual evidence. Well, when you actually saw the 60-minute report that first came out, you saw the actual family members who were involved in the question periods, in the process, in the steps, in the therapy, the counseling, and all that stuff, and then you understood that where this was coming from and why maybe this is needed, okay? Because there are illnesses out there that we can't even talk about and describe what somebody goes through on a daily basis, and they would just rather end it. And why are we prolonging their suffering when there is no health, green light at the end of the tunnel where there's going to be something that's going to save them a pill? It's detrimental. So why are we continuing their suffering? You know, and the family members agree upon this, and everybody does, and all that. Not just some individual coming up to him and say, hey, I want to kill myself, help me. He didn't do that, and that's the way people made him out to look. So, Frank, a hero in disguise, a blessing to a lot of families, and saved a lot of people from many, many, many years of suffering that they would have been prolonged to. So,
okay, John, you're starting to sound like an episode of Saturday Night Live. No, you are. You know why? Dr. Morgenthaler was pro-abortion. You're thinking of the other doctor in the U.S. that terminated people. I think, Aaron, am I sniffing something right now?
Oh, no. Yeah, you're thinking about, well, okay, he's the abortion guy. Sorry, guys. I'm thinking about the guy.
We're thinking about Kevorkian.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking about Kevorkian. I thought that's what you said first.
No.
Like I said, I'm kind of watching the game, guys.
Remember the Saturday Night Live? What's her name? The one that died, the redhead that was married to the guy with the Judy. Was it Judy?
I'm terrible with names.
Saturday Night Live. Remember the one that died very young? And she used to do that thing. I'm right now, and you know that you do this. By the way, we're not talking about that. Never mind.
Stomach cancer. Yeah, she died from stomach cancer. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, never mind.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, no. We're
this
talking about the abortion
doctor.
Guy. We're talking about the Canadian abortion guy. Not Dr.
Okay, well, that's enough. All right, the abortion situation, that's another thing. I don't even get involved in that. That's everybody's personal.
That's
a touchy subject.
No,
that's
no
worries. Yeah.
No worries.
Yeah, no, I'd rather not talk about that. You guys talk about football today? What? Nothing? No news.
This is a Friday free-for-all, John. We don't necessarily talk about football here.
Hang on, Aaron.
Hold on a second. Frank, pardon me. Yeah. You said no news, Argo news today?
There is big news today. Slow down, John. Stop railroading my mind. Today, Ricky Ray got extended to 2015.
That's pretty good news.
That's awfully good news.
Yeah.
And anybody who's an Argo fan knows that. They knew it about 5 minutes after it happened. It's great news, and that'll be something great to talk about on Wednesday. It'll be great to talk about it on Wednesday.
It'll be old news by Wednesday. There's more news coming up, Frank. This story will be overblown. That's why I'm just bringing it up today, because I'm not going to be talking about it after today. It's a great thing, but it's not one of those things that you talk about in 7 days. Maybe you can on next Wednesday. That's up to you. But it's not going to be my storyline. There's a lot of things that are going to be coming out probably in the next few days. So I'm looking forward to it. Remember, there's cuts. There's new players being added. The Chris Williams story in Hamilton, I'm intrigued with that, but I think we're going to lose him. He's gone to the CFL.
Already lost him. He's already been released.
No, it's still an arbitration. There was no conclusion done yet. From what I heard today, they haven't resolved the arbitration hearing.
We'll call 680 News liars then, because the last that I heard from them was that he'd actually been released by the Argonauts.
No, we're talking about the Ticat, Chris Williams of the Ticats.
Sorry, my apologies. I thought we were talking about the other Williams with Toronto. My bad.
Hey, it happened
Williams?
With me with
Michael
Morgan
Williams?
Caller, right? So, no worries.
Yeah. Wait, they released – I had too long a nap this afternoon. Did they release Michael Williams? Are we talking Michael Williams
yes.
or Chris Williams?
What I'd heard this afternoon from 680 News was that they released Williams.
Really? One day of training camp?
Yeah, well, that was what I'd heard. You know, 680 News may have been wrong in their reporting, but that's what I'd heard.
Oh, well, maybe it could be Chris Williams or the Ticats, maybe. I might have said. Well, I think he's definitely gone. Again, I don't know about his arbitration hearing, but I heard that he's not coming back, and it's a done deal for him up there, supposedly. I don't know. Anyway, yeah, so I'm done with that. So the good news is Argos have been signed. Ticats is going to lose a really good star player. For them, so that's about it, Frank. I'm done for the night. I gotta go back to the game. By the way, they got out, no runs scored. Still 3-0 Jays, though.
Oh, by the way, John, here's the article from TSN. Receiver Mike Williams, NFL first round draft pick, was released along with three other players by the Argonauts. Also let go were Sean Bray McNeil, Josh Pinson, and yep, they let him go. The 6'5", 241-pound Williams played at University of Southern California and was selected 10th overall by the Detroit Lions in 2005. He was released. He spent five seasons with Detroit, Oakland, and Seattle, but yeah, he's gone.
He's gone, Frank.
Gone.
I got the interview yesterday.
Yeah, well, at least I got to interview him before he left.
Exactly. Wow.
Also, Chris Williams won't be at the Ticat camp and the Ticat camp and may not return to the team at all.
Investor, yeah, I'm a serious investor.
Oops.
But I'm a busy
apologies.
Guy. It used to be easier, but now there's more choices.
There we go.
No,
but yeah, Chris Williams is gone from the Ticats. He's not reporting.
Well, that's great news, Aaron. Thanks for filling us in on that. You see that?
No, no worries.
Come back.
No, good stuff. That's where Frank. That's I'm a little bit shocked. You got one interview. That's great.
At least he snuck one in before he left.
No shit. I mean, come on. One day. I mean, they canceled practice today. I wasn't sure about the details. Maybe it was the heat or...
Thank you for that information.
Yeah.
No, apologies. Didn't mean to spring it on you like that.
Aaron, are they signing anyone else? Well, are there any signings you'd like to tell us about?
Well, I'll be honest with you, the most recent signing that I was really excited about was Shane Herbert from the WLU Golden Hawks.
He had an outstanding
season with them in his final year in 2011. He went to the training camp last year but didn't make the final cut. But I'm really excited that they've re-signed this kid. He's got great potential. He's got great speed. So I'm really hoping for something out of him.
Hey, you know what, Frank? It should be an interesting first day at camp tomorrow for you. With all these cuts before training camp opens up.
Yeah, like, can I interview the guy that just got cut? No.
Remember you asked me last week what I thought about, you know, and you were thinking the potential he might have, and I told you, top-heavy receivers that are great in the NFL, don't cut it up here. You know, tall, skinny guys are better. It's just the way it works up here. You got to have the speed to do the cuts, and I don't know. I was shocked. I thought he would at least, you know, have a few more reps. And I guess Barker and Scott just didn't see it in him. So it is what it is. But I'm a little bit shocked. A little bit shocked.
Well, you wonder sometimes. Okay, let me get a plug in for next week. Next week, I've got the phones will be ringing to Los Angeles. I've got four stunt people, two girls, two boys, two men, two women that are stunt artists in the business of the movies in California, and I'll be talking to them. We'll be talking to them next week. So both of you are welcome to join in.
Zoe Bell,
huh?
Is one of them Zoe Bell?
Let me check. Hang on. Let me see. I got Brianna Womack, Lance K. Jameson.
There's two other names. I don't have them up here yet. I'm just in, actually, while we've been on the air, I've been making arrangements with them to what time I'll be calling them and stuff like that. These are people not necessarily the highest profile in Hollywood, but they do actually do it for a living, and I wanted to talk to them and find out what it's like to be behind the scenes and to do the kind of stunt work that they do and how involved it is. And
now, if I understand correctly, Brianna Womack was actually in Star Trek, correct, as well as State of Play?
Well, you're probably right.
And she was in Twilight. Hey, we got something for everybody next week.
There you go, you see?
Frank, you should probably give a shout-out to Christopher Johnson. He's a big Argo fan out in California over there, and he listens to your show.
Hey, Chris, how's it going, Chris Johnson? Glad to hear you.
Christopher Johnson.
Christopher Johnson?
Yeah. He's a good California, big Argo fan out there. It shocked me when I saw him. Met him on Facebook last year, and, he's all over the Argo stuff, and it's nice to see, all the way down in California, some really diehard Argo fans.
Well, like us, they don't have an NFL team.
Yes, there you go.
unlike us, they'll probably end up with one.
Hey, Frank, Raider Nation wants a word.
Okay, what's that word?
Go to hell.
There it is. all right, so I guess it's safe to say then, Mayor Rob Ford, because I like to conclude any conversation we begin. So the conversation begins with what kind of effect this whole story has, and in this case it started as both our viewpoints on the situation and then the third being John's. And at the end of the day, I think we all agree that guilt should be punished when guilt has been established. Correct?
Correct.
Right?
Good enough for me. Frank, I don't want to cut you off, and I am. I'm going to just say thanks for the time. Aaron, nice talking to you. Frank, nice chatting with you both. And you guys take care. We'll talk to you maybe somewhere down next week or perhaps, and good luck with training camp tomorrow. Frank, be bright and early.
And Sunday.
Sunday's a bigger day because you're going to actually see the first scrimmages going on. Or, some practice, actually.
What time should I be there, John? What time should I be there?
We'll talk off air. That way we don't give all the tips away to everybody else. Then you'll have a big mob with you.
There you go.
All right? I'll give you the tips
John's
later,
Frank. John's my mentor on my training camp coverage.
Boy, are you...
I wasn't trying to be funny.
No, Frank, has it not paid off for you so far, even after one day?
100%. 100%. 2 days, John, 2 days.
I know. Don't worry. I'll give you the tips later. And listen, guys, I really want to go watch this game. And thanks for taking the time to talk. And have a good night. Have a good weekend, everybody. Adios, amigo. Bye-bye. Hello.
Good night, Steven. Are you there?
Yeah.
Bye-bye. Okay, Aaron. So that leaves us now. We have a grand total of, let me see, we have a grand total of, I can't raise the window. I don't know how much time I got left.
I'm looking at 42 minutes.
Yeah, something like that. Fair enough. So those two subjects, the abortion subject was rather easy to discuss. We didn't have much argument there. Fervor rose a little bit on but Rob Ford is a guy who creates alienation, who creates, he's just, there's just something about him.
Oh, whoops.
Yeah. See, I knew the fuck. Another world spoken from. It's funny. It really, the whole situation is kind of funny. My children and wife, you know the guy that wants the jeweler guy that buys all the jewelry and stuff? What's that guy's name?
Oh, Cashman Oliver?
Yeah, Cashman Oliver.
Yeah.
He scares my children and my wife in the sense that he's creepy. To them, in their opinion, I don't think the guy, I don't see it. But there are images that people project that reach certain people that it doesn't matter what they do or say. It always comes across like, oh, shut the hell up, right? You know what I mean? And I think Rob Ford is one of those people that all he needs to do is look at you, and I'm not talking about the majority of people, but at least some people, just looking at him and listening to him and watching how he behaves just pisses them off. And I think that's what the case is with Rob Ford. So, you know, and then, you know, there's guys that are that everybody forgives, you know, like Justin Trudeau. Just like Justin Trudeau, he can make a comment like and it's recorded that he thinks Quebecers are better than the rest of Canadians. And
you have to understand, however, that quote was actually taken out of context because
I'm dying to know the context.
Well, he was actually kind of making fun of his father, Pierre. See, that question was actually asked of him back in 1996, 1997.
Okay.
So we're talking about 15, 16 years ago.
Okay,
and he was actually imitating and quoting his father because, you know, Quebecers are better than everybody else. That's where question
was from. Oh, so he was in character when he said it.
Yes. It wasn't actually him speaking. It was him kind of gently mocking his father for his views. That's where it comes from, which is a quote that's entirely taken out of context, which everybody has bitten on.
Cool. Well, then good for him. Then good for
him. Oh, yeah, and the other thing is that whole striptease thing that he was doing raised $1,900 for a cancer charity. So, you know, that whole him doing a striptease thing that the Conservative Party marked them for actually raised $1,900 because it was for a lunch with Justin Trudeau in support of the Canadian Cancer Society.
So what you're saying then is the people who believe in Justin know the truth, and all it does is solidify their loyalty to him.
This is why they managed to raise $2 million right after those ads were aired, because people knew that they were bullshit. And additionally, the footage that the Canadian Conservative Party used, the CPC used, was actually stolen without permission from Huffington Post, a news organization. The Huffington Post actually sent them a cease and desist letter and requested that they acknowledge the fact that they'd stolen the footage, but the CPC has refused to do so. Make of that what you will. But, you know, I mean, that pretty much says everything I need to say about the CPC at this point. I'll be honest with you, I'm a card-carrying member of the Canadian Conservative Party, but I'm not necessarily a fan.
Well, again, this is where one has to understand politics and what politics really means to people.
Exactly.
You know, politicians define themselves sometimes very vaguely because they want to remain within the confines of their following, which is what you said. We've almost gone complete circle here, actually, the conversation. The reason Harper won't, commend the life of Morgenthaler because, you know, it insults his base. So,
exactly.
You know, you don't always get what the politician really believes.
Exactly. And here's the other thing, you know, and by praising Morgenthaler, Harper will then potentially be violating his one election pledge that he's actually stuck to, which is his promise not to reopen the abortion debate.
Absolutely.
So,
and
this is where you end up.
I think it's fine that it's closed because I don't think there's any advantage to debating it any further. I think, you know, we've arrived at a point where even as friends, when you don't agree in what you're saying, we agree to disagree.
Yeah.
And allow status quo to exist.
Exactly. I mean, at this point, really, when you look at the entire, you know, pro-life, pro-choice debate, there really is nowhere else for us to go because we've discussed every single available option.
Cool.
So, we're just as well off to let the matter lie.
All right. So on a more local thing, the mayor of all mayors is not happy. I don't understand why.
Not mayor, correct?
Huh?
You said mayor, not mayor, correct?
The mayor of all.
A Y O R as opposed to M A R E.
That's right, M A Y O R. The mayor of all mayors, otherwise known as Hazel McCallion, was upset with the provincial government this week because there's a plan in the works to make our transportation system more user-friendly and less of a carbon footprint by using transit and expansion of transit in the billions of dollars in taxes over some 10, 12, whatever it is, years to pay for the revamping of the transit system in Southern Ontario. And I assume it would be Southern Ontario because why would it concern Mayor McCallion to be concerned about a transit system that exists and ends in Toronto?
No, fair enough.
Do you know the debate that's going on about it?
I believe so.
Okay. The trouble with transit is that it's expensive at its inception. The good thing about transit is it can be very cheap in the long term and also be carbon neutral.
If managed correctly, yes.
Right? So,
yep.
So I guess it's hard. Like, well, they're talking about, what is it? They were talking about 5 cents a liter on gas directly. And it was going to cost about $1,200 an Ontarian a year, I believe, to create this transit system. I'm almost starting to think that they might as well go to, I know nobody likes this idea, like when you drive through the States, tolls. I'm beginning to think that tolls are going to be required here in Canada and in Southern Ontario.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you talking about Brampton and Mississauga's big move, quote-unquote, transit projects with Metrolinx?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right.
And if you look, and when you search it, you'll see that the cost is in the billions a year, like about $2 billion a year, they're saying.
Approximately,
if I remember correctly, right?
Yeah.
And
that's what I'm saying.
Is that too high a price to pay? What do you think?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I am a big fan of Mississauga's current transit system. The only problem I see with an expansion like that, especially under Metrolinx, is the fact that additional pressures are not only going to be brought against Brampton and Mississauga transit people, but GO transit people as well. Because GO is also planning on expanding.
Absolutely.
And I'm not sure if you're aware of that. I'm reasonably certain you're aware of this, Frank. But they're actually looking to into parking levies, toll roads, and fare increases, as well as municipal tax increase for specifically in the HST for a Metrolinx expansion.
Now, wouldn't it, considering I have a young family, and part of that young family is a daughter that has insurance, and it's ridiculous how much it costs for her to drive a car.
No, you know what? Insurance costs for younger individuals is pretty much insane. I mean, when you really think about it, it's kind of crazy.
You can almost rent an apartment for that price.
Yeah, pretty much.
And I know people are sitting in the highway and they almost think they're living in their car, but to have to pay like you're living in your car, that's the double that is the double threat, if you will.
Yep.
You know.
No argument here.
I think basically we're going to have to become transit friendly because I don't think a lot of people are going to be able to afford the insurance.
That the unfortunate thing is that is actually a very real possibility at this point, which is kind of sobering and kind of frightening at the same time.
Absolutely. And I have 4 cars in my driveway.
How do you afford 4 cars? Can I get your job? Son of a gun.
I have 4 cars in my driveway. 1 belongs to my daughter and 3 belong to my wife and I.
3 cars?
Why, you think I'm kidding?
Frank,
you're making it sound like
your wallet had a Frank, I would punch it. I can barely afford 1 car. You have got 4? Come on,
no,
man.
No, 3. I have three. My daughter has the one. One is my daughter.
So does she pay for the one?
Oh, yeah, all on her own, man.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a little bit better, I guess. Still makes me jealous. 3 cars.
Wow.
3 cars. Next time you plead poverty when we're out at the bar, I'm going to deny you.
Hey, well, I will.
3 freaking cars.
I will plead poverty because I do own 3 cars.
there's your out.
There you go. I have 3 cars at home. I can't afford to drink beer, especially with the insurance rates. And you don't want to hear what cars I own.
No, probably not, because it'll make me even more jealous.
A Lamborghini, a Ferrari,
and
a smart car. And we only drive the smart car.
The smart car makes it all okay. Don't feel so bad.
And we only drive the smart car. You know what it's like to get six people in a smart car?
They must look like clowns.
Exactly. We're all with horns going, down the road. It looks really cool going down the Queensway. Six heads sticking out of two windows.
Okay, which one's rules?
Whichever. It's pretty sad. No, in reality, that's not what I own. I have four children, so we have the family cruiser, which is a GM minivan, and then of course we have our loyalty to Ford was pushed onto us. So I have a very cheap Cobalt. So
old Chevy Cobalt / Cavalier / Sunfire.
Absolutely. I had a Sunfire before it. they're not cars that are that hard to replace financially, but I could replace them every 4 years with what I pay in insurance.
Ouch.
Right? And that's essentially what's wrong with insurance today is that insurance is like cable and like other other things that you pay for that the government approves prices. Essentially what governments do is that, in my opinion, in my interpretation, and I could be wrong, but it feels as though people like Rogers, insurance companies, bank institutions, they go to government and they're allowed to charge so that they make a profit, whereas other companies have to somehow extrapolate profit.
You do know that under Premier Wynne's budget, they're actually mandating that insurance costs drop 15%. Yeah,
that is across the board, and not necessarily everybody. Like some people, like for example, that live in low risk areas, well, their insurance will go down 25%. And on the flip side, those here in Mississauga and Toronto and Brampton will go down maybe 5%.
Well, the important thing is you're still getting a drop out of it.
Well, tell my daughter who got an increase last couple of weeks ago of a lot of money.
I'm sorry, how old is the daughter that got the increase?
22.
Well, you see, there's your problem. 20,
yeah. Well, hey, listen. She works hard and does not earn a lot of money by average standards. She works very hard. She's very smart. She's gone to school. She's paid for an education. That education got her the job. And it just life at that point isn't fair to people. Like people her age are really forced to work hard for very little.
No, this is
and,
true.
And then the government or the insurance company comes and ensures that they don't keep much of it either. Not only do they earn very little, they don't get to keep much of it.
It's a vicious cycle.
It's not a cycle. Cycle implies a circular motion. This is more of a stabbing motion.
Well, stabbing can be – it all depends on how you do it.
You know, like, give me a break. I feel sorry for my children. And whenever I think politically, and even when I speak to my children about politics, I tell my children, vote NDP. Do you know why I say that? Because the NDP are the ones that care about them. And this is me generalizing. I know you're a conservative, a card-carrying conservative, as you put it. Different segments of society are served by different political groups.
That's just life.
That's just life, right? So as a good father, I need to be honest to my children. So if they're going to school and if they rely on fair insurance, costs and whatever, and the NDP is more friendly to those people, the Liberals next, and the Conservatives couldn't care less about those people because they pay their people with money who can afford to pay their children's education. They don't need any help. In fact, they'd prefer that nobody got help because it gives their kids an advantage over other children. That's how I look at politics. Wrongly or rightly, that's how I see it. That's the way it works. Politicians are servants to certain masters. And the question is, which master are they serving? And then The trick is, in following politics and entering your vote, is who really looks after you, who's really concerned with your life and what affects your life. You know what I mean?
Well, that's the thing. A lot of people in Canada these days tend to vote negatively. And when I say vote negatively, I mean they vote for the individual that they believe is going to hurt their vision of Canada the least.
Well, that is sadly true. The reason that is because when we go into the voting booth in Canada, we have one vote. We can't vote. We either vote for the guy that's running in our community, you know, our MP, or we vote for the Prime Minister. We can't do both. So in essence, I think you're left too looking at the opposition and saying, well, since I can't vote for the guy I want, at least I can vote. I got to now consider also who am I voting against. Because I think you're right. By virtue of how the electoral process works in Canada, you basically are. Yeah, I can't argue the point. You probably are. I probably am doing it subconsciously. In fact, you know, more I think about it, the more consciously I think about it. Because in conversations with my wife, you know, that's what she says all the time. Well, I don't want to vote for this guy.
No, it's always about don't want to vote for. that's really what it boils down to is who do you not want to vote for?
Wow, that's just crazy.
But in nautical terms, it's the lesser of two weevils.
There you go. And there's a bowl full of weevils.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to take a short break because I need to listen to this song. This is Hockey Stompin' Tom Connors.
Hello out there. We're on the air. It's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps, and the players bump, and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Second period. Where players dash with skates of flash, the home team trails behind. But they grab the puck and go bursting up, and they're down across the line. They storm the crease like bumblebees. They travel like a burning flame. We see them slide the puck inside. It's a 1-1 hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Third period, last game in the playoffs, too. Oh, take me where the hockey players face off down the rink, and the Stanley Cup is all filled up for the champs who win the drink. Now the final flick of a hockey stick and a one gigantic scream. The puck is in, the home team wins the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name. And the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Okay. I took a little longer to get back than I thought there, Aaron.
No worries, it happens.
I could have left your microphone on so you could have jumped in.
Well, you got to mute the loudmouth every once in a while, right?
Okay. Now, we jumped right out of away from the NHL playoffs, and obviously now we're down to the four last Stanley Cup champions. In the East, you've got Pittsburgh and Boston. In the West, you've got Chicago and L.A., and each of them are winners in the last 4 years of the Stanley Cup. Any surprises on the teams that made it here? I guess that first statement kind of makes the next statement kind of inane almost, doesn't it?
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you look at the records of these teams over the course of the season, and you look at who should actually be here versus who actually is here. I mean, you had Chicago with their absolutely phenomenal winning string. It's not a surprise that they're there at all. you look at the team that actually brought them there. You look at how Detroit played, and for a team that hasn't really shown well in the past couple of years, they did surprisingly well in the playoffs, which is a nice thing to see. What I'm actually really, really hoping for ahead of all of this is an original six matchup for the finals.
Are you kidding me?
I would love that. Are you kidding me? Chicago-Boston? Oh, how phenomenal would that be? I would be in hockey heaven.
Well, I mean, even, I guess.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You go ahead.
Well, I was going to say Boston-Pittsburgh. And then Chicago-Los Angeles. You got the championships from last year versus the championships from the champions from the year before. It doesn't get better than this. I mean, this is what you absolutely hope for. Not to be a Debbie Downer for the Toronto Maple Leafs fans, but if the Leafs were in here anywhere, I'd be a little bit upset. I mean, you have, right now, you're looking at the creme de la creme of NHL hockey. You know, you're looking at two original six teams, you're looking at two nouveau expansion teams. This is just, it really honestly does not get a heck of a lot better than this.
Well, okay, to take your point a bit further, you've got the two original six teams and the two original expansion six teams.
That's correct.
So
you're looking at the best from, you know, pre-1976 versus the best post-1976, which makes me feel old, because I was born in
67. 67. You obviously were born in 75. 67.
No, you're right. Oh, you're 67. Right. 67, my bad. I'm getting a little ahead of myself and a little too eager here.
Well, you made
but
your
no,
point.
No, I mean, you look at what's currently on the boards for them, and this is just absolutely awesome. It really is. And I know I have friends in the States right now who are absolutely ecstatic about this sort of thing. Because, Will Wheaton has got to be ecstatic because LA Kings are back again. So that's going to lead to a whole great string of celebrity tweets and Tumblr pics and all sorts of God knows what. You have the venerable institutions of Chicago and Boston. And then you've got that other team, Pittsburgh, who have, Sidney Crosby.
Did you make a nasty remark in the direction of Sidney Crosby? I'm Sidney Crosby. You got me doing that.
See, you said it too.
Guess we won't get him on the show, huh?
Oh, well, it happens. What are you going to do?
My daughters, that's their favorite player.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't get me wrong. I mean, I think Sidney is a really fantastic player. I'm glad he's kept the mask so far. I'm glad he hasn't ditched that because it's kind of important. But, I mean...
Well, he's supposed to ditch it for the final, at least the Eastern final.
We'll see what happens here. I'll be honest with you because I would rather see jaw protector than drop it.
I get you. I feel what you're saying, and you're right, and that would be a parental unit's determination as well. No doubt.
No, most definitely. But I mean, like, he's one of the best players in the game right now. Don't get me wrong. I may mock him and call him Cindy, but he is one of the most phenomenal players in the game. He's one of the most adaptable players in the game right now. And the fact that if he ditches the face mask, he's currently putting himself more at risk.
And there's no need.
No, there's no need for him to risk himself. I mean, this boy is looking at millions of dollars worth of endorsements. He's looking at millions of dollars worth of contract fees, et cetera, et cetera. There's no need to prove that you're macho by ditching it. You know what I mean? Like, I'm allergic to pain, so you have to understand here, I'm highly allergic to pain. If it were my choice and I were playing in the NHL, I would totally wear a face mask.
Well, hockey players aren't known for being too bright. After all, for hundreds of years, they wore a jock strap, and for that time, they didn't wear helmets. So,
And in the words of Gordie Howe, yeah, but I can pay somebody to think for me.
Well, he didn't need to. He had a wife that was pretty smart. So Colleen Howe was a pretty bright person. So So I don't know that he needed to pay anybody else to look after his interests. She did a great job. I think she even did a good job for her sons. Okay, so we have Boston and Pittsburgh. You've laid out the gauntlet. You've basically, whether you think it'll happen, you're hoping it'll happen, and that is, of course, that Boston beats Pittsburgh. Do you think they'll make quick work of Pittsburgh?
No, this is one of those series that's going to go in the entire seven games. And I wouldn't be surprised if there was more than one overtime game in there. So this is these are two fiercely competitive teams. These are two teams that dominated when they had to during the regular season, and they've been spectacular throughout the playoffs. I mean, the fact that Boston turned it around the way they did against the Leafs in Game 7 with those three quick goals to finish them off is proof enough in and of themselves that Boston still has what it takes, even 4 years on.
All right, so I happen to think that the series between Pittsburgh and Boston is going to raise the level of some players and lower it for the others. I think it's going to be a career-making series. Somewhere in there, the greatness of players will be denied and enhanced.
May actually be the series where we see Zdeno Chara finally get his due.
As in punishment?
Well, a combination of both. We're going to see him get physically punished by the Pittsburgh Penguins. In particular, I'm looking at Malkin to take multiple runs at the guy. But at the same time, you're going to see that he is actually one of the elite playmakers, and he is one of the elite defensive players in the league. He's taken his share of knocks from when he played with Ottawa. He's taken his share of knocks when he was traded to Boston for that fact. And you know, over his hit against Max Pacioretty of the Canadiens a couple of years back, and his size, and the perception that he's slow. I have the feeling that at this point Zdeno is going to come into his own and is going to prove a lot of the critics wrong, and he's really going to shine in this particular series. That's, of course, this is just my particular take on it. But
No. I think the platform is there for that to happen for him. The platform is there to happen for Jerome Iginla. You know, he has played in not obscurity, but you know, not in fame, if you will. And, you know, playing for Calgary, like playing for the Leafs the past few years, has only been great in his own little world as opposed to the world stage, which I believe, and I agree with you, that there's going to be a lot of people very interested in that contest between those two. That series will draw a lot of attention, and as will the Chicago-LA series. I mean, you know, the American owners can't be any happier with the... You know, you don't have Tampa, you don't have Miami, you don't have Columbus. You know, that I'll take it from that angle. You're talking, when you talk about the original six and you talk about the teams that are in there, these are teams with a lot of media attention, all of them.
No,
so it's going to be a good draw.
No, there's absolutely no doubt about that. And the fact that they're all American teams, but they have a high percentage of Canadian players playing for them, just enhances that. It's great for ratings south of the border, and it's great for people in Los Angeles. It's great for people in Chicago who, quite frankly, Chicago's never really gotten their due. They're a phenomenal team. They're an absolutely fantastic team, but I don't think they get the credit that they deserve for what they've done.
Well, I think it's because they play in the West myself.
That's entirely it. The only problem is, and this is an issue I think the NHL has never adequately addressed, most of the original six teams are in the East. I think Chicago's the only original six team that's in the West. So the only chance that you're going to have to see an original six matchup is if Chicago wins out.
All right, so we've established that your hope is Boston will be in there, and then we've got the LA Chicago series. So you expect Chicago to win, or you're just hoping they'll win?
I'm really hoping that Chicago will win. I mean, their record during the regular season leads me to believe, and their performance during the playoffs, which has been absolutely stellar, leads me to believe that they can beat the Kings. But you know, this is one of those things where you have to be careful what you wish for.
I'm gonna go Pittsburgh and L.A. You're going Boston and Chicago.
So are we at least agreed on Chicago then at that point? At this point?
I'm not sure. Repeat that, please. Repeat that.
Are we at least agreed that we're hoping that Chicago will be there?
I used to be a Chicago. That's the only team I've been a fan of. Other than the Leafs, I was a Leaf fan at a young age and a Chicago fan at a younger age. The Leafs got rid of Keon. I wasn't a Leaf fan anymore, and I stopped being a fan of any team at that point. Sure. Every so often I see teams and experience teams that excite me by virtue of what they've done and what they're capable of doing. For example, you highlighted Detroit. I liked Detroit and I liked the way they played, and they showed the opposite that Chicago is. Chicago has a bit of a childish side. You know, they're whiners. You know, they whine a lot. You know, and that of course starts with the captain who did a lot of whining. You know, so I sort of sided with Detroit because Detroit played the game. Went to the box, didn't complain to the same extent that the Chicago players did. And the same is true with both Pittsburgh and Boston. They're both whiny teams that expect – I understand what you're saying, that their greatness is great. They are great because of their greatness. But they're also over the top with being very cocky, you know, the swagger that people talk about with hockey teams. Boston has the favoritism of the league, the number one league owner, looks after them as best he can, giving them every advantage they can get. Pittsburgh has two governors where every other team in the league only has one. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me that Pittsburgh and Boston are in the final. They have the biggest and most influential owners in the league on their side. That's who their owners are. So, you know, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all. The National Hockey League is a political organization more than it is a sporting endeavor. It has lost, in my mind, the respect of being an actual sporting endeavor. So that's why I don't have a favorite team, because it's just there's no point having a favorite team, because the league decides how things are going to go by the little bit of assistance they give where they shouldn't. The officiating is my first and most exaggerated example. The stupidity that the officiating has appeared to be, I'm glad I'm not a fan of any team, because I'd be killing a few people. It's been a horrendous example of officiating this year.
As I told Mike the other day, my favorite team is the black and white one.
They're the most entertaining.
Yeah, you can see where I'm coming from on this one too. No, I'm in agreement with you there. The only problem that we run into is how do we perfect this? I mean, do we increase the amount of instant replay? You know,
what we do, it's real simple. The solution is very simple, is that referees are judged just like players, and they should be fined publicly for stupidity. Players are. Referees should too. And the reason I say that, and for those of you out there that the conspiracy theorists out there, you'll enjoy why I say this. I say this because there needs to be more transparency in the way judgment is meted out. For example, when a player gets a headshot, every time there's a headshot, Aaron, there should be a system in place. They tell us there is, but I don't believe it's true, because I know it isn't true. Every time there's a shot to the head, there should be a proclamation saying, this has been reviewed, and it is not a penalty because, or it is a penalty because. What they do is they ignore some hits completely. Completely. They ignore them, don't acknowledge them. And one has to wonder whether those are not being acknowledged for political reasons. Do you know what I mean? So you want better officiating? What you do is you put the officials in the position where you can't give them room to be manipulated, you know, to give them no other option but to be manipulated. I don't know if I'm making any sense here. So that every action that they take, they're accountable for. so that they can say, hey, listen, don't look at me like that. Don't try to intimidate me and in your way trying to make me help your team, you know, by intimidating me, because I'm responsible for what I do, and my actions are, you know, like they can be judged. Now, if they can't be judged and an official's actions are judged behind closed doors, one has to wonder whether their actions are really actions that they're taking or they're being made to take. That's the transparency that's lacking, in my opinion.
Well, the problem, however, Frank, and what you're going to run into is this. Once you start calling into question the calls that these officials are making on the ice,
mm-hmm.
what's really the point of having them on the ice?
Well, that is the point of having them on the ice. Let's take a look. Well, then let's discuss the considerations. What happened recently. There was a giant concern because a penalty was called when a goal was scored in the game between Chicago and Detroit. There was an altercation at the Chicago bench. Correct? You know the one I'm talking about?
Yep.
Okay. So the referee said, I called a penalty because there were two penalties I was calling, which in my mind was correct. It's not his job to make sure that a goal that might be scored isn't interfered with by his call as far as a penalty is concerned. You're putting the cart before the horse. If he's awarding a double minor before a goal scored, it's a double minor before the goal scored. It's that simple. If you disagree with the double minor, that's another story that has nothing to do with the goal. You see what I'm saying? So
no,
he did the right thing. But the political side, which is the media side, which you either can or cannot agree with me, that the media has a motivation and an interest in what happens on the ice, because the results of what happened on the ice can help them more if it goes one way rather than another. For example, if a low interest team can be dispensed of, it becomes an advantage to the media, because the broadcast station would rather have the most high profile teams meeting in the Stanley Cup final. Why? Because it makes the most money for them. Is that not true? And that's the transparency I'm talking about, where, you know, they were basically turning what was a good call by an official and calling it a bad call because it ended up a goal.
No, I'm going back over the footage now just to see, you know, if there was anything that I missed. And I don't know. I mean, this is one of those, it can sort of go either way.
The fact is, the question you need to ask yourself is, could that have been a double minor in a referee's mind?
The answer to that question, in my opinion, is yes.
So it only would follow that goal was not disallowed because it was a goal. It was disallowed because something happened before the goal, which was a double
minor.
Which
was that whole kerfuffle in front of the Detroit Red Wings bench.
That, in his mind, could have gotten totally out of hand because of where it happened.
Exactly.
Right?
I mean,
so
you have three Detroit players in that area, as well as three Detroit players already on the ice. Four Chicago Blackhawks are already in the zone, but there's one guy that's already tied up in front of that area with the three other Detroit players. That's where I think the controversy arises. And the problem that you get into there is the fact that Detroit didn't have possession. Chicago had possession. Therefore, there's no way for them to call the penalty.
But Holmstrom puts
the puck in the net. So, technically speaking, that penalty doesn't really count.
Well, only if there was only one penalty being called. But there wasn't. There were two
being called.
No,
that's true. There was more than one penalty being called, and one of them, if I'm remembering correctly, one of them would have been against Chicago, the other was against Detroit.
Which means play's dead.
Exactly. Here's the controversy and the issue that the referees have to deal with. Do they let the play continue, or do they whistle it dead? And
I get what you're saying. Again, I'll repeat what I said before. The altercation took place beside the Chicago bench. While
behind
the aggressor was... Huh?
Behind the play.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't matter where it's happening. In my opinion, it doesn't matter where it's happening. They can say what they want about it being behind the play or whatever. But if there's an altercation that in the official's mind could blow up into something, you know, he made a bad call, but only after the fact. You know, see, that's the thing that I don't like. And that's the transparency issue that I'm talking about. Is that
yeah,
if he made a mistake.
The NHL, regardless of what fans think, and regardless of what pundits on the radio like us think, they have to defend their referees. There's no other choice for them.
Publicly.
No, yeah, granted. And that's all they're going to admit, because that's all that they can confess to, is publicly.
Right.
You know, Walcom blew the whistle because of what happened between Brandon Saad and Kyle Quincy. And that had to happen. They can't turn around and say, yeah, well, our referees are dumbasses and they called something they shouldn't have and something like that.
They should have known a goal was going to be scored.
Their own credibility.
They should have known a goal was going to be scored, which they don't. And that's proof that he was doing the right thing, because he decided that these two guys had done something that required the play to stop.
Exactly.
That's all there is
point.
To it.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't agree with... See, we can dispute the penalties, right? But we can't dispute the fact that he was calling the play dead. And then when a referee, and here's the thing that I'm going to say, is that the Detroit team is facing what's going on with the official, and they're not as wide awake about that. They're distracted by what's going on behind the play more than the Chicago team is. So the Chicago team's focused on what they're doing while the Detroit team isn't. That's why this kind of penalty is an advantage to Chicago, which was taken away from them. The advantage was taken away from them because they were completely thinking of a live play, whereas Detroit had questions because they saw the referee, they saw his hand go up. So let's be honest. I mean, at that point, if you're facing the referee and you see the arm go up, you're going to let up a little bit. You know, anybody who plays sports knows that if you don't know there's a penalty call coming, you're not affected by that. But if you know there's a penalty coming, you do let up. It's you know, it's natural, because as far as you're concerned, you see the play is going to go dead, and then something else happens. They score on you, you know, because they don't know that there's a penalty being called.
No, that's
you know?
True.
And that's what I don't like about the media, is that the media looks at everything from their perspective, which is to be expected. The same way Chicago had their back to what was going on, so did the media. Why? Because a goal was taken away, which gave them an opportunity to discuss, you know, something of interest, because there's a yin and a yang there. There's a happy Detroit fans and unhappy Chicago fans. So, you know, I didn't have a problem with the penalty call. I didn't have a problem with them taking the goal back. I mean, I watched referees in the Boston series ignore penalties that are automatic. You know, I watched a Leaf player's nose get busted, and there wasn't a penalty, and there wasn't even a mention of it by the disciplinarians, right? When a headshot's taken, they're supposed to review every headshot. They never reviewed that one. And if it wasn't for Grabowski's inability to be concussed, because that guy defies being concussed, you know. I mean,
seriously,
you know, he's taken raps where guys have lost two. Like, there are at least six games and penalties Boston avoided because they smashed Grabowski instead of somebody else. The guy's a punching bag.
I mean, if it had Kessel or Loophole, it would have been automatic.
No, because Loophole in the same game got a headshot, and he never said anything about it.
You got a point there.
And that's what I'm saying. And, you know, I admit I'm a Toronto fan, not a Leaf fan. I'm a Toronto fan, which means that anytime there's a possibility for a party in Toronto, I'm all for it. But I'm not a Leaf fan. And, you know, they haven't proven enough to me since I was 17, 40 years ago, whatever, that they actually care about winning. And by caring, I mean winning. You know, that's the only way you prove to me that you care about winning, is that you win. And they haven't shown that, you know, often enough for my liking. And yeah, Boston defeated Toronto with a lot of help from the officials, a lot of help, because that game that they lost, they were ahead 4-1. They should have been ahead 6 or 7-1 by virtue of a lot of the headshots and the delay of game calls that should have been made that were not ones that are judgment calls. You know, that's the part that irritates me more than anything.
A lot of what wasn't called was actually black and white textbook that should have been.
Yeah, the fans throwing stuff on the ice is an automatic penalty. Didn't get called. A player gets his nose broken by an elbow.
Nobody saw that?
Huh? Nobody saw that? It was an accident?
Well, you know, it's playoff hockey. Boys will be boys. We'll let them play.
I get to let them play until the guys that are, well, like I said, it's politics. I saw a clear vision of politics there, where Boston had the advantage, and they had the blessing of the National Hockey League to win by virtue of the officiating.
I was going to say it's quote unquote better for the league.
Absolutely, but you know, it's better, like, you know, all I can say is, you know that saying, follow the money?
Yep.
Okay. The whole idea of follow the money is that you skip from all the numbers and get down to the total, to what it adds up to. The National Hockey League officiating and the way the league works and the platform that it is for Canadian teams, by virtue of the results, are not favored by the National Hockey League. It has been 20 years since a Canadian team has won the Cup. Not Toronto. Not Montreal. Not Boston. I'm sorry. Not Ottawa. Edmonton. Calgary. Winnipeg. It's been all the teams. None of the teams have won the Cup in 20 years.
And
follow the money.
All in 1993.
Yep.
That's the Canadian team, and that's it.
So you tell me, does that not defy odds?
Yeah, I'm hesitant to say that it's odds.
Aaron, does it not defy the odds? What are the odds? What do the odds say? The odds say that if all things being equal, there's what, 28 teams in the league? Every team.
Yeah, nobody. The odds also say that the Leafs shouldn't have sucked that badly since 1967, but, you know.
But I'm saying that it's been in the league's benefit. It's been the league's benefit that the Leafs suck. It helps the American owners to have the Leafs suck. There is no other community that doesn't have the same rules applied that everywhere else has. If in New York, they have territorial rights for games that are broadcast. All right? There's no place else where you can watch a Leaf game and two other hockey games on the same night on broadcast television. You can't find another community that has another team playing on the same night, another game on the same night as the home team in that home area. In New York, they're all territorial rights. Why is it in Southern Ontario it's okay to have TSN broadcast while Sportsnet is broadcasting a hockey game at the same time? Because they are taking money out of Ontario to support the American teams. Not only are they taking more money, a higher percentage of money out of Ontario, they're giving less back. In other words, 40, 50 years of Stanley Cup hockey, they're handicapping and creating a situation where all the revenue and or the motivation and teams that, you know, if you divide all the fans, there are enough teams. If you compared fans and teams, if X amount of fans were worth this many teams, by virtue of what happens in Tampa and Miami, there should be 47 teams in Southern Ontario.
Fair enough.
And all I'm saying is it's no taxation without representation. We are taxed by the National Hockey League, literally taxed by the National Hockey League without representation. They take money out of here for the benefit of other teams outside of Ontario. That's not right. And that's the reason why we don't have any Canadian winners, because we don't have this equal right to win. because we don't have the equal amount of teams that we deserve. There should be a team in Hamilton. There should be a team in Markham. There should be a team in Quebec by virtue of how much we invest in the National Hockey League. We invest more than half the money that the NHL takes in is brought by Canadian Broadcasting. More than half. But we don't have more than half of the teams. Taxation with representation.
So what we're basically looking at then is a Tea Party situation for Canada when it comes to hockey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is exactly the irony we talk about Boston. Isn't that why they threw tea into the bay in Boston?
Yes, sir, without representation.
That's right. And that's what the Americans are doing to us with hockey. They're taxing us without representation. And that's what I don't like. And that's why I don't have a team, a favorite team. Because I don't think if I have a favorite team, it's going to be one that's local. And the one that's local doesn't deserve my attention, in my opinion. I watch them. Religiously, I watch them because I want to know, as a fan, the number one thing you want to do as a fan is get to know the players on your team, right?
Yeah.
That's how you develop an attachment. That's why, Jarrett loves the Toronto Rock, right? And probably why you love the Toronto Rock. You know everything about every player or as much as you can know about them, right? And that's part of being a fan. That's part of being a fan. Well, it's no fun being a fan of the Maple Leafs.
No, you know what? I can't disagree with you on that one.
Okay. Listen, the show was over about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, really? Was it?
Maybe.
Damn, I didn't even notice that.
That's because I had my rant.
No, okay, Aaron. Well, there you go.
We'll stay in touch. We'll see what's going on. You should, if you have a day off, you got to come to one of the Argo training. Well, on Saturday, if you're free, you should come to the training camp. Just for
that's at UTM.
Yeah, it may be. It's been in Oakville at St. Thomas Aquinas because they've had problems with the field conditions at UTM.
Okay. All right. All right. So what are we looking
at
tomorrow then?
We'll talk about it off air.
All right.
Get your rest. Get your beauty rest because I know you need it as much as I do.
Oh, good God! I'm horrifically ugly. It's never going to change.
I got to sleep in or I can't shave. We'll talk to you later, buddy.
All right. Thank you very much, sir.
And thank you. All right. No worries. You've been listening to Candid Frank Live. We hope you enjoyed the program today. It was Friday Night Free for All. We just gab. And anybody that wants to gab in can call. Nobody called in, so that meant they were happy with what we had to say, I think. I'm not sure. I really am not sure. Okay, thanks for tuning in, and let's see how we'll take this one out. Oh, my favorite commercial so far. I like this commercial. Here we go, this one here. We'll fade out with this one. Argos. All night, so many quarterbacks, we don't know what to do. Captain Glenn goes down, we got Porter too. Mark the big head, he returns them all. Kick return, punt return, missed field goal. Arlen Bruce, reception left and right. He's gonna catch the ball if it's anywhere in sight. Big style up, clutch SMB, surpass 1,000 yards. Grand Prix. Don't forget about Mark Quinn, Carter 2, one hand, Maurice Mann. Yeah, you know what it is.